Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. I'm looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Happy Monday, fun day, June 18th, 2018. So glad you allowed us to be a part of your week. It's the first of the week, and really hope you guys are off to a great start. We've got a lot to get to. Monday is always a busy show. Before I go through what we are going to be chatting about throughout the next 60 minutes, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports, coming to you live on the campus of Michigan State University. Thank you, Chayo, for that introduction. As always, here in Studio S, and multiple ways in which you can listen to us. You may be listening on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. You may be listening to the podcast version of the show at WKAR.org, or you may even be tuned in via Facebook.com/WKAR News, as we have the live stream up and streaming right there. You can comment below that video to weigh in or call 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. However you may be listening, we really appreciate it. All right, Ian Hawley, the man behind the glass. Ian, how was your weekend, my friend?
It was great. Thanks for asking. I went home for Father's Day this weekend, had a nice long weekend with the family, and got to spend some quality time with them. So I'm happy.
That's
but
great
happy
stuff.
To be back, man.
Without a doubt. What'd you do for your pops? What'd you get him?
We got him, we have a pool behind our house, so we got him like an oversized lounge chair. Mm-hmm. He's been spending a lot of time out there since he's been recovering from his knee surgery.
Okay.
So we got him like a nice reclining lounge chair to keep him comfortable.
I'm sure he enjoyed that, especially, you know, with the weather being the way it is right now. I mean, it is a scorcher out there today, though. I mean, but it's summertime, right? Summer officially begins actually this week on Thursday, is the summer solstice,
mm-hmm.
the first day of summer. So he'll be enjoying that, I'm sure, throughout the summer in the backyard, right?
Yes, sir. He was sitting out there most of the day yesterday just relaxing.
That's good stuff, man. Got to see my pops yesterday and see the fam much of the weekend. You know, Saturday was such a busy day. It really was, Ian. I was downtown Detroit at the Emmys ceremony. Mm-hmm. WKAR got nominated for 12 Emmys. And I was amongst that group, and I got nominated along with Tori Petria of the Detroit Lions, Justin Rose of WXYZ-TV, as well as Trevor Thompson of Fox Sports Detroit. Came up short. Jay Rose wins the Sports Reporter Emmy, now for back-to-back years, but just to be in that company, man, it's unbelievably cool that you come in, you got a red carpet, the food was awesome, they had like a little photo booth you come into. It was an amazing time. And prior to that, I actually got to witness the wedding of my fraternity brother, my sans, Justin Dunn, and Shaughnessy, my sis, my little sis, who is officially now the sis, now that she is married, my fraternity brother. So the Dunns, I got to see the Dunns getting married on Saturday. It is wedding season. I still got one more wedding to go to come next month. And you know, I got to thinking in as well, and I would love to hear our listeners, hear from our listeners who are married, who have been married. I'm curious because, you know, I've been to about six weddings now, Ian. I'm hitting that age where I'm going to a lot of them now. A lot of my friends are getting engaged or getting married, getting hitched, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm always curious to see if the guy who's getting married up there, when he starts to see that bride come down the aisle, I wonder how many guys actually break down and cry. Because I haven't witnessed it in person. My frat brothers, they're kind of tough. You know what I mean? They prideful. You mm-hmm. know, so I thought Justin was going to crack on Saturday, but he didn't. I mean,
he held sat together.
There. He kind of swayed back and forth as Shaughnessy was coming down the aisle, but I didn't see, you know, maybe his eyes got watery. I couldn't tell from where I was sitting, but I didn't see him wipe anything. He didn't cry. He didn't cry. He was just happy. He was elated, of course. My frat brother Brandon, same thing with him. We were taking bets, actually, before the wedding, whether or not he was going to break down and cry. But I'm curious, guys out there who are married or even, you know, the wife of those husbands, did your guy break down and cry? I'm curious. Well, do you think you would cry, Ian, when you do make that move, when you get married? Do you think you're going to break down and cry?
If I had to put money on it, I would say yes. I'm
a
pretty emotional guy, yeah.
That's bad to say a crybaby. I mean, because real men cry, okay? Real men. I was having this conversation the other day, you know, when it comes to movies, you know, whether or not a guy should cry while watching a movie. I'm not ashamed. I cry at movies. I don't think there's nothing wrong with it. You know, there's some emotional movies out there. You know, I think the first movie I cried while watching was The Lion King back when I was little. All mm-hmm. right. I mean, that's an emotional movie when Mufasa dies. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Lion King by now, my goodness, I don't care if I just spoiled your party today. All right. That's The Lion King. You should have been seeing it. But there's nothing wrong with men crying at weddings or at movies. Is there, Ian?
No, man. Real men okay. wear pink and real men aren't afraid to show their emotions.
I like that. Put that on a T-shirt, my friend. So I want to hear from the couples out there. Men, have you cried? Did you cry at your wedding? Did you cry at your wedding? And even if you're too prideful to call in and say, yeah, Al, I did, I'm calling out the wives of those husbands. Did your man cry on your wedding day? And if so, I want to be the first to say there's nothing wrong with it. All right. Say it with your chest. All right. Let's hit our headliners right now. Our quick hit headliners. A lot to get to, folks. Let's get to it. Quick update when it comes to the weekend that was Lansing United. Lansing's very own minor league soccer team, the Lansing United men's team, enters this week coming off a 1-1 tie against first place Dayton Dutch Lions. Forward Costi Moni found the breakthrough in the 44th minute, scoring off a cross from Kyle Carr. Moni collected, turned, and buried the shot in the lower left corner for his third goal of the season, but an equalizer from the Dutch Lions proved to be the deciding factor in the game. Lansing United is still unbeaten. 4 wins, 4 draws, 0 losses. All right, the Lansing Lugnuts, folks. Ryan Noda has been going just nuts so far this season, blasting his 8th homer in a 14-game span in the Lugnuts, which sit right now at 43-27, putting the finishing touch on a strong first half of the season with an 8-4 win over the South Bend Cubs on Sunday afternoon at Cooley Law School Stadium. The victory completed a 3-game sweep of the Cubs, the Lugnuts' 5th sweep of the first half. Noda added an RBI single in a 3-run 4th inning against lefty Manuel Rondon, finishing with a walk, 3 hits, 3 RBIs. Since May 30th, the 2017 Appalachian League MVP has raised his batting average from 195 to 253 while supplying 21 RBIs in 14 games. Lansing starter Colton Laws tossed 5 innings of work, allowing 7 hits and 3 runs before handing the ball to his bullpen. There you have that. And, of course, tomorrow, and I'm really knocking on wood here, rain is scheduled in the forecast, but tomorrow is going to be and is scheduled to be a big day here in the Lansing area pertaining to the Lansing Lugnuts and Cooley Law School Stadium, seeing as though the Midwest League All-Star Game is coming to Cooley Law School Stadium. We're trying to get out there in the morning. We'll have a video feature for you all from that All-Star game, as I'll be chatting with Jesse Goldberg Strassler, and we'll be getting sights and scenes from that All-Star game tomorrow. So let's hope it does not rain. All right, let's hope it doesn't rain. Let's keep our fingers crossed for that.
All right, despite losing their biggest slugger in Miguel Cabrera, the Old English D have now found themselves on a five-game winning streak thanks to an abundance of offense led by Nicholas Castellanos and Jose Iglesias. They finished their series with the Chicago White Sox, finishing a sweep through a 3-1 victory to seal the deal. Castellanos hit a two-run big fly yesterday to start things off for the Tigers, and Iglesias hit a one-run single to complete the scoring. A good pitching outing from Blaine Hardy and the relief personnel definitely helped the Tigers' chances. They are now 36-37, just one game from sitting at the 500 mark, 8-1 against the White Sox overall, 6-0 on the road at Guaranteed Rate Field, and they have won 7 of the last 10 games. I'll have more on the Tigers' surprising start to the season later on this hour, because I don't believe anybody would have thought that the Tigers would be sitting here at 36-37, just out of the league, out of the lead of the league lead in the AL Central. So I have more on the Tigers in just a moment. You don't want to miss that convo. And after a stint in jail and 2 years away from the game of basketball, former Michigan State University guard Keith Appling is back in the pros. The former MSU guard is signed with Caneros del Este in the Dominican League. Now, he made his debut with the team on Thursday, scoring 5 points in 14 minutes. Appling from the D, Detroit native, former Doughboy in Pershing High School, finished his Michigan State career in 2014 as an all-Big Ten guard. He then played two professional seasons playing primarily in the NBA's D League. Early in 2016, he signed a 10-day contract with the Orlando Magic and played 5 games with the team. Later that year, Appling, though, was arrested 3 times in a 4-month period on gun charges. He was sentenced to a year in jail on 2 weapons charges, 1 charge of fleeing a police officer and 1 charge of obstructing a police officer. He was released earlier this year. Caneros del Este, a 2-time Dominican League champion, has played 3 games this season. The league's regular season lasts until late next month. Good to see Keith out of jail and back to basketball. Let's hope he can just stay focused. Just stay focused, Keith. Michigan Stadium will feature blue end zones this season for the first time in the history of the university's football program. How about that, Wolverines fans? Michigan made the announcement on Friday via social media. The end zone facelift is a part of a larger turf replacement project happening this summer at Michigan Stadium and Schembechler Hall. Now, the Detroit Lions recently made a similar change, coloring the Ford Field end zones blue in 2016. Fan reactions on social media are mixed, with some, loving the look, giving them flashbacks of their most recent Rose Bowl game. Others, on the other hand, were critical of it. I tell you, just folks just do not like, they don't like change sometimes. I actually dig it. I saw the promo video. I thought it looked pretty slick and sleek, if you ask me, Ian. But it's just so funny how people trip over the smallest things, man. Like, it's the color of the end zone, and it's blue is one of the school colors. What's the problem, man? I don't get it. I like it.
Yeah, you can't please everybody, man. There's always going to be some haters out there, but it's pretty cool Michigan's switching it up a little bit. Maybe they'll win some extra games because of it.
No, I don't think they're going to need more than a blue end zone, I tell you that, brother. But it's just a refreshing look. You know what I mean? I have no problem with it whatsoever. All right, and winning the 2018 U.S. Open on Sunday afternoon, Brooks Koepka joined Ben Hogan and Curtis Strange as the only two golfers to go back-to-back at the event since World War II. He also joined Ernie Els, Tiger Woods, and Jack Nicklaus as the only golfers with a pair of U.S. Open titles before the age of 30. Now, Koepka backed up his 16-under victory at Erin Hills, a course that some discounted for, it's crazy, gargantuan fairways and receptive greens, with a win at Shinnecock Hills, maybe the greatest and toughest championship venue in the country, with the highest winning score ever recorded in a major at this track, 281. It is, I think they made it just way too hard. I'll go on that rant in just a minute, but Koepka proved not only that last year wasn't a fluke, it was actually foreshadowing for a future that could not be brighter if you dressed it in one of Ricky Fowler's Sunday scripts. Koepka who came into the final day tied with three others at three over, took hold of the tourney with three birdies in his first five holes on Sunday. And all of this came while 27-year-old Englishman Tommy Fleetwood was scorching on the backside of the course en route to a U.S. Open record tying 63. And Fleetwood was really close to carding a 62, which would have been just insane. We'll have more on the U.S. Open in just a moment, but there was also some drama at the U.S. Open. If you tuned in on Saturday, everybody is talking about this. We're actually going to lead our convo with this topic, but Phil Mickelson, the lefty, right? Phil started the final round of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, 14 strokes behind the leaders, but he had become the story of the tournament thanks to a bizarre penalty and a ruling from the U.S. Golf Association that many disagreed with. The incident came on the 13th hole of the third round on Saturday when Mickelson hit his bogey putt well past the hole, and it appeared destined to roll off the green. But this is what Phil did. Rather than wait to see where the ball might end up, Mickelson ran after the ball and hit it again as it was still moving. Joe Buck was on the call. He was stunned and momentarily speechless. Quote, "I've never seen anything like that from a world-class player in my life." That's a horrible Joe Buck impression, Ian, but that's what Joe Buck had to say. Did you see that putt?
I saw the highlights of it, yes.
I've never seen anything like that. I do it all the time, of course, which
it was
is so bad.
I mean, you think maybe like some 17, 18-year-old kid at the U.S. Open, you know, big stage,
yeah,
loses his mind for a minute. But Phil Mickelson, he's been there plenty of times. He should know better than that.
That's what's so shocking. I mean, us golfers who golf casually, we do it all the time, all right? But to see somebody like Phil Mickelson, a legend on tour, a living legend on tour, that was pretty shocking. Mickelson was assessed a two-stroke penalty for the infraction as the U.S. Golf Association cited Rule 14-5. More on that in just a moment. And the 2018 World Cup is already becoming a spectacle to remember with upsets galore, Mexico beating defending World Cup champion Germany in a colossal upset 1-0, and Switzerland tying Brazil 1-1, proving that this bracket is open for anyone who really wants it. This World Cup is also memorable in terms of off-the-field drama with the stunning firing of coach Julian Lopetegui of Spain's Soccer Federation, and the most recent drama being Croatia striker Nikola Kalinic being sent home from the World Cup after refusing to come on as a substitute in his team's first bout against Nigeria, citing a back injury was the reason for his refusal. Some fans are interpreting this incident as a disgrace to Croatia's dignity, while others believe that it was just a cautious move for his health moving forward. And also, I saw some more drama coming out of the World Cup, which I'll save that for my weekend winner segment. It's really a weekend loser, all right? So you don't want to miss that. If you want to chime in, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527, facebook.com/WKARnews, and tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports.
What happened over at 13?
Look, I don't mean disrespect by anybody. I know it's a two-shot penalty, and at that time, I just didn't feel like going back and forth and hitting the same shot over. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on. It's my understanding of the rules. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to do that. I just finally did.
Did you think the ball was going to roll off the green when you hit it?
No question. It was going to go down into the same spot behind the bunker. It wasn't going to have a shot. And I don't know if I would have been able to save a shot or whatnot, but I know it's a two-shot penalty hitting a moving ball. I tried to hit as close to the hole as I could to make the next one. And, you know, you take the two shots, you move on.
Does it show disrespect to the championship?
It's certainly not meant that way. It's meant to, you know, take advantage of the rules as best as you can. And in that situation, it was just going. I was just going back and forth, and I would gladly take the two shots over continuing that that display.
You're really admired around this golfing world, especially here at the U.S. Open. What do you say to those people that love you so much, follow you? Do you regret what you've done?
I've had an awesome day. The people here have been incredible. It's been, you know, singing happy birthdays, wishing happy birthdays. The people here have made coming here over the decades an awesome experience. And I had, you know, it's a fun birthday. I don't mean it in any disrespect. And if that's the way people took it, I apologize to them. But that's not the way it was taken. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on, and...
Throwback for you there, for all of you 80s fans, the romantic. I hear the secrets that you keep when you're talking in your sleep. I love that joint. Happy Monday. Happy Monday. Happy Monday. If there's any such thing, right? A lot of people dread Mondays, Ian, because it's the start of the work week, back to the grind. I love it because I love being productive and, you know, I love planning out my goals and what I want to accomplish for the week. Monday means productivity, and I love being productive. So happy Monday to you, Ian Ollie.
Happy Monday to you as well, sir.
Let's
glad
dive
to
right
be
into
here.
It. Yeah, definitely. And let's dive right into it. You heard Phil Mickelson, and that media scrum that happened right after his round was completed on Saturday, the third round of the U.S. Open, it was insane. I don't think I've seen anything like that since, you know, Tiger's dominance back in, like, you know, his heyday when he was really, like, blowing out the field by, like, 20 strokes. I don't think I've seen a media scrum like that in quite some time, probably since Tiger's dominance, because I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in professional golf history. I think you got to go back to, like, 1999 when John Daly actually did the same thing, you know, hitting the ball while it's still rolling. That is a no-no in the world of golf. You know, in putt-putt, we do it all the time. When I play golf on a regular, you know, you get frustrated, you have a bad hole, and, you know, I made 5 putt. And on putt number 4, Ian, I flip my wig, and I'm like, all right, just give me an 8 on this. And the ball may be rolling, and I just tap it. It happens all the time. Us amateur golfers do it all the time. But Phil Mickelson, at first when I saw this, I thought it was a joke. I saw it yesterday. Courtesy of my homie Chris Gandy, who golfs all the time. And Chris posted it on his InstaChat. And I thought it was like Phil was during a practice round. I didn't think this was actually during his play in the U.S. Open. I said, first off, I chuckled because that's pretty funny. It reminds me of me sometimes out there on the golf course. And then the second thought was, okay, when did this take place? And I began to do some research, and I went on Twitter, and immediately when I hopped on Twitter and just typed in the search bar, Phil Mickelson, people were going nuts over this. You had golf purists out there saying Phil Mickelson should be disqualified. There is no way that he should have continued his round. There is no way that he should have played on Sunday. He should have been DQ'd. That's what a lot of golf purists were saying. For me, I was a bit outraged at the outrage because, I mean, come on, man. This is golf. I get it. And golf has this kind of, how can I put this? This really, I'm searching for the word, Ian. Uppity? Bougie? I'm going to go with bougie. You ever heard the word bougie?
Oh, plenty of times.
We use this a lot on the west side of Detroit. You know, just when somebody's walking around like, you know, they think they're better than you. I call them bougie. That's what we say
in Detroit. So is that, you've heard that word before?
Oh yeah, I've listened to Migos once or twice.
Right? Yeah, it's all
snobby
in rap songs.
Is another good word for it.
It's a word that is definitely prevalent in hip hop culture too. But it's, you know, just kind of being a snob, like, you know. And there's been that kind of aura in the world of golf for a long time. So if anything, especially when you talk about a golfer of the magnitude and on the stature of a Phil Mickelson, when you see something like this, of course you're going to have some golf purists out there saying, "What? Phil, what are you doing? You're tarnishing our great game. You're making a mockery of our great game." So I was a bit outraged that there were so many people saying that. Because, look, I mean, first off, this is the first time I've seen this happen when it comes to a big name like a Phil Mickelson. They brought up, you know, I kept hearing, you know, John Daly back in 1999. I don't know if you've seen the video of that, Ian, but that is, it's pretty funny as well. But, you know, that's John Daly. You know, that's hit it hard and hit it long. You know, John was just kind of like that. He was like a rock star during his time of domination in the world of golf back in the 90s. So I'm not surprised that John Daly did it. But Lefty, I mean, Phil, right? But, I mean, why are we making such a big deal out of this? You know, I just don't understand it. I mean, for me, if anything, it was a funny moment, and I think in a way, and you heard Phil, you know, you heard what he had to say, and honestly, it's kind of smart. You know, I think the rule needs to be changed when discussing this, Ian, because Phil knew, and they made this course so tough, just way too tough this weekend. It really turned me off as a fan of golf, as a frequent viewer of golf, especially when it comes to the majors. I don't miss a major, watching a major. It really turned me off because you had these just balloon scores that eliminated some of the big names before the weekend even started. I mean, horrible rounds from guys like Jordan Spieth to Rory McIlroy to Tiger Woods. It was just tough to watch this weekend. So you eliminate those names. They're not there playing this weekend. You know, you're trying to you want to see low scores, and it's impossible at this course. I think Phil just got fed up on that 13th hole, and he knew that ball was going to roll past the bunker, just roll down past the bunker. He was going to have a tough chip, and after the chip, there was no guarantee that he was going to putt it in after that chip, right? So he didn't want it to roll down. Just give me my two-stroke penalty, and I'll just put it in two hits here. You know, he ended up scoring a 10 on that hole. But I just want to first, before I move further here and describe the rule, what was your reaction to the video? Do you think that a lot of folks are making too big of a deal out of this? I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
My initial reaction was kind of the same as everybody else's, you know, like, what is he doing? Has he lost his mind? But I was kind of like you. I was kind of outraged at the outrage. But I don't necessarily agree with you on the point that you made about the U.S. Open being too challenging this year. For me personally, I like to see those big scores because it means the competition is tough. You know, you want the majors to be the hardest of the courses that people play all year. So I don't necessarily have a problem with how difficult they made it because it kind of weeded out some of the lower tier players. And honestly, it gave some of the higher tier players some struggles as well. And that's fun for me to watch. It makes the competition more interesting. But with Phil Mickelson, I see where he's coming from. He was thinking some strategy, you know, just give me the two-stroke penalty. I'll move on with my life. But I was like you. I was like, why are people making such a big deal out of this? Like, sure, it might be fun to laugh at because, you know, he made kind of a blunder at first glance, but I didn't really necessarily see why the golf purists were so upset with him, especially because I know, like you say, you know, amateur golfers, we knock the ball around all the time,
but that's
whether
us.
It's
that's
moving
amateurs.
Or not.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we shouldn't necessarily get upset, especially if he's trying to play into his strategy here.
I've done it multiple times.
And I do it every time I golf.
Before the golf season ends here in Michigan, I'm gonna do it multiple times throughout the rest of the golf year, okay? Hey, I may even just make a mockery of it just for the heck of it. I was just thinking, you know, next time I'm out, I'm just going to just post a video of me just trying to reenact what Phil did. You know. And then Phil ran. Have you ever seen Phil Mickelson run? He ran on that video. Did you see that?
Yeah, like, he was booking it.
He was booking it, man. I'm like, I've never seen Phil Mickelson run in my life. It was a comical video. But I get it from the standpoint of, I mean, we don't expect anybody of Phil Mickelson's kind of caliber to do something like that. And you heard the announcers. I mentioned Joe Buck in the headliners. I mean, he was a bit stunned because we've never seen that before. And then Phil, after he puts the ball in, he kind of laughs and then just immediately goes to the next hole. And also to add, you know, to counter your point about, you know, you like the course being challenging. I have no problem with a challenging course, but there's a limit, man. There is a limit. I mean, there was a video floating around before even round one of I forget which player it was, but he posted a video on the 18th hole, and he's got his cell phone, and he just drops the ball, just drops it nice and softly on the green of the 18th hole, and the ball rolled about 100 feet all the way down to the left bunker. That's a little ridiculous.
So you think they went overboard?
They went way overboard. It was like playing on ice this weekend. Like, I mean, it was impossible to shoot low. So I like seeing low scores. I like seeing birdies. Seeing golfers struggle, sure. Can the average golfer relate to it? Without a doubt. But we want to see these guys putting up low scores because it's fun. It's just fun to go out there and see miraculous shots and birdies. And then when you're eliminating big names like a Tiger, like a Rory, you know, like a Jordan Spieth, that's the reason why I tune in. I mean, my interest level went low. I'm not even going to hold you up. When I saw that Tiger Woods missed the cut in combination with guys like Rory and Jordan, I said, oh my gosh, who's left? Who don't want to? Brooks Koepka? Brooks Koepka? If you took, I kid you not, Ian, this is real. If you took Jordan, Rory, you know, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, if you put those guys who, you know, did not have a great weekend, got cut before the weekend, if you took those four or five golfers and put them in just a tournament by themselves competing for like $1 million, and you compared that to the ratings that you got this weekend at the U.S. Open, I guarantee those ratings would be higher.
Well, that's fair, but you've got the top five golfers in the world right there.
Well, you had Justin Johnson, numero uno, in the world playing this weekend. Brooks Koepka, who won the U.S. Open last year. Guys, don't tune in for those guys. The personalities and the history behind golfers like a Rory and a Tiger, that's what appeals the casual golf fan to the game. So if you're eliminating guys like that, it's like, you know, the casual golf fan tunes out. They don't want to see Brooks Koepka. Sure, great golfer, back-to-back U.S. Open champ, great accomplishment. But I would much rather see Tiger Woods out there. I'm just saying, man. So, with that being said, Jack Kerwin just came in studio while the intro was running, and he's going to help me out with this rule just to make sure I got it right. Jack, first off, man, welcome to the show. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. Good to see you. How was your weekend?
Great. Had a great, busy weekend. I'm glad to be back in the saddle, though. Let's dive into this rule now. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, if I have any of the logistics wrong here when it comes to this rule. And again, I want to say this as well, Ian. I think some of the rules in the game of golf are a little too ridiculous. I actually think, you know, this two-shot penalty is actually a little soft, because I think other golfers out there may try to use this to their advantage in the future. You know, I think Phil has shined light into a little loophole here, if you ask me. But rule 14-5, that's the rule that was enacted here, right, Jack?
Correct, yes, sir.
A player must not make a stroke at his ball while it is moving. That's what it says. Am I missing any details there, or is that pretty much cut and dry what it says?
And if they enforce that rule, it's a two-stroke penalty.
Correct. If they enforce that rule, it's a two-shot penalty, that's what we saw happen with Phil Mickelson. That rule was applied, which, again, to me, you know, was a trap door for the USGA to sneak out while nobody was looking, because rule 14-5 is sandwiched by other rules that apply to golf balls that are, you know, minutely moving around a player. Because if you think of a ball, you know, on the green, you know, or dancing on the fairway, you know, it was not created to address what Mickelson did, which looked like, you know, when you really evaluate and dive into this, Ian, according to that, I mean, I thought about what if, like, Dustin Johnson off the tee, if hits a ball off the tee, right, and let's just say he picked up that ball, or somebody picked up that ball and just kind of, you know, just walked on down the green and just placed it near the hole. Is that a two-shot penalty? Shouldn't he be disqualified if something like that happens? I think it's vague. I think this rule, in my opinion, is way too vague. And I think the punishment should be much more harsh than a two-stroke penalty.
I think they need to reevaluate a lot of those rules to make them more clear, and so they don't have as much overlap with each other. Because I can see the point being made. I mean, there was another rule. If you stop a moving ball, then you're automatically disqualified. But didn't Phil Mickelson technically stop his ball? At one point, the ball has to come to a complete stop before it can change directions. That's just physics. So, they have to decide which of those rules to apply. So I can see the people making the point that he should have been disqualified based on that other rule, but they chose to apply a different rule instead. So he only got a two-stroke penalty. I mean, there's way too much gray area in that.
There is. I'll get your thoughts on it, Jack, before I dive. Because there's another point I want to make when it comes to Rule 14-5 as well. What do you think of the rule?
You know what? I got to disagree with you, actually.
You like the rule?
Well, I'm okay with it just because, like what you brought up with John Daly in 1999. See, people were making the argument that he didn't get disqualified because he's Phil, because he's a big name. I saw people saying that on Twitter. But to me, I guess the precedent was there. John Daly did a similar thing in 1999 and he only got a two-stroke penalty for it. So,
it's the same rule. Yeah.
So I didn't have a huge issue with it, no.
I'll say this. Again, it was not created to address what Mickelson did. It looked like a move. When I'm out there playing miniature golf with my stepdad, if I miss a putt and I'm like, all right, you got me this hole, I may just hit it while it's moving and put it in, right? I mean, this happens. This happens all the time. In fact, there is a clause in Rule 14-5 for what... for exactly what Mickelson did, which says, quote, ball purposely deflected or stopped by player, partner, or caddy. Then it says, see Rule 1-2. Mm-hmm. Now, Rule 1-2 is applied in situations like Mickelson's where a player is purposefully altering a previous shot, but the language in the rule doesn't make room for a player making a stroke on such a shot, mostly because nobody within reason would have ever expected this kind of thing to happen. All right. They weren't thinking in terms of a situation like this. It only states that a player can't deflect or stop a shot, which is basically what he did. So Mickelson, he wriggles through this loophole because, he pulled his club back and made a stroke. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but Rule 14-5 does not appear to have been created for this type of situation. That's why Rule 1-2 exists. So I'm getting probably way over people's heads who are listening right now in their car, in their backyard, wherever you may be listening. But I think the rule needs to be more specific, and I think the consequence has to be harsher than a two-stroke penalty because, Ian, that ball was going to roll at the bottom of that hill near the bunker. You think Phil was going to put it in two strokes after that?
No, sir. He was in trouble.
He probably would have chipped it, and there's no guarantee that would have gotten him close enough off the chip to put it in two. So, golfers, you may see a golfer trying, play with this loophole in future tournaments. I don't know. We'll see. What do you think? Is the outrage over this completely blown out of proportion? I think it is. I think a lot of it has to do with just folks – just being a little bit too bougie with the game of golf. It happened. Let's keep it moving, man. Is it shocking? Was it shocking when it happened? And it was pretty comedic as well. Let's keep it real as well. It was pretty funny when watching it. Yeah. But for him to be DQ'd, and I also saw a story that came out, I believe, actually this morning. There were, again, as you guys have stated, there were many people who wondered whether Phil was going to be disqualified, whether Phil deserved to tee it up in Sunday's final round from what happened on Saturday on that 13th green. Now, Mickelson's wife, Amy, told Golf Week's Beth Ann Nichols that her husband, Phil, offered to withdraw from the event during a phone call to USGA Executive Director Mike Davis on Saturday. The five-time major champ was prompted to pick up the phone after hearing widespread opinion that he should be disqualified. And this is a direct quote coming from Amy. Quote, when he heard that, he called Mike Davis and said, if I've done something that crosses the line that much, then I need to withdraw immediately. And then Amy goes on to say, quote, it's not his finest moment, but hopefully he'll learn from it. Like anybody, good people make mistakes. Mickelson, he commented after that. Phil Mickelson commented after that and said, quote, if somebody's offended by that, I apologize. So he declined to speak with the media on Sunday. His wife, Amy, says that Phil did reach out and offered to withdraw. because of the controversy that ensued after people saw what happened.
As a classy move by Phil, but I just think people's anger is misguided. You know, if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at the PGA for their rule. Don't hate the player, hate the game. He's just following the rules, man.
He's following the rules. If anything, the rule needs to be changed, if you have any criticism here. Where would you rank this in terms of, because we were also kicking this around yesterday, me and the homies, in terms of comparing this mistake, this situation, to J.R. Smith?
I was just going to ask you that, actually.
You're going to ask me that?
I was.
For me, J.R.'s is way more. I mean, Phil didn't have a shot at winning this. That's the NBA Finals. You know, you got a chance to knock off the defending world champion Golden State Warriors, and you do something stupid like that. I mean, you know, Phil finished tied 48th in the U.S. Open, all right? It's not like he was contending for the lead here. But, you know, it was very shocking, but it's nowhere near the level of J.R. Smith, in my opinion.
Well, his quote made it seem like he kind of knew what he was doing there.
Yeah, yeah.
J.R. Smith clearly had no idea what was going on. So
that's a good point.
J.R. Smith had no plan in mind with that whole draw the ball back outside thing. Phil Mickelson seemed like, at least from his quote, that he had kind of had a plan. So and you're right, he wasn't anywhere near the leader. If he had been, maybe his strategy would have been different. Maybe he would have let the ball roll.
Yeah.
But JR is 100 times worse and much more comical, in my opinion.
I totally agree. All right. If you have thoughts on Phil Mickelson's, tap after, while the ball was still rolling on Saturday in the U.S. Open third round, please call in 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527 is the number to call. We'll get to a few of your comments. Courtesy of Facebook.com/WKAR News on the other side of the break. You can also even tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. When we come back, I want to make some points when it comes to the Detroit Tigers, who are now coming off a sweep of the Chicago White Sox over the weekend. The Tigers turning a few heads, I must say. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished recapping the drama that was the U.S. Open over the weekend, round three on the 13th hole. Phil Mickelson getting assessed a two-stroke penalty for hitting his golf ball on the green while it was still moving. He was assessed a two-stroke penalty, and we kind of went back and forth. You heard the thoughts from Jack Kerwin, Current Sports production assistant and Current Sports engineer Ian Hawley. And just to clarify, just to make sure, you know, I think that golf did the right thing in not disqualifying Phil. I thought that he should have just kept playing and played the final round. I think that it was shocking, certainly. And should he have been punished? Certainly. But you go to the rule book says if you do something like that, you will have a two-stroke penalty. I have no problem with them sticking to the rule. I just have a problem with the rule. I think the two strokes, I mean, Ian, you can recover from a two-stroke penalty. I think it's got to be at least, we were just chatting, I think maybe 5, 6, you know.
Sounds more reasonable, and it would definitely discourage people from doing that in the future.
Thank you, because I don't want to see golfers using this as a way to, you know, just using this to their advantage. You know, using that this rule loophole to their advantage in the future. I think Phil kind of exposed that. And he had very smart comments after that third round blunder on the 13th hole about why he decided to do it. He knew the ball was going to roll down, you know, off the green. So just give me my two strokes. You know, I can live with that. So I get it. I get it from that standpoint. But it has to be a harsher penalty. He should have still played, though. Ben comments on our Facebook page and says, I think that they blew the Phil Mickelson situation out of proportion. I totally agree, Ben, but you know, it just amazed me how many bougie golf fans out there were like, he should be disqualified. He should not move on. Why is he moving to the next tee? What is going on here? Ridiculous. Chill, man. It just irritated me when I saw that on social media. Like, it happened. Let's keep it moving. It's not like he did this, you know, while competing for first place in the tournament. But it's not like he, you know, he got his penalty. They stuck to the rule book. What more do you want? You know, it doesn't say in the rule book you should be disqualified if you do this. Also, you know, I asked a question to start the show. You know, I was at my fraternity brother's wedding over the weekend. He married a sister of mine, Shaughnessy. Absolutely love her. Loved them both. And, you know, I was just watching Justin as Shaughnessy came down the aisle. I was just seeing if he was going to tear up and cry, and he didn't. You know, he decided to just hold in the emotions, and he did a good job of it. But I don't think it would have been anything wrong if he cried. And I think we have that stigma sometimes in the world of manhood that if you cry, you're lesser than a man. Mm-hmm. I don't get that.
It's 2018, man. It's not 1950 anymore. We can stop being so macho and chauvinistic.
Yeah, we're way too macho sometimes among each other as males. I cry at movies. All right. I'm not ashamed to say that. All right. I don't know which, probably the last movie I cried in. Probably Creed for me. That ending scene in Creed got me. But Ben also comments on our Facebook page and says that I did not cry at my wedding back in September of 2013. It was a sunny but breezy cool day on our wedding day. And it was a small wedding with family and friends in my parents' backyard. So there you have that. Ben did not cry. But again, if you know, I would love to hear from some, you know, any male out there who is listening, who is not afraid, you know, to come on the air and say, yeah, Al, I cried. I mean, that's the love of my life. I saw her coming down that aisle and I was up there and, I thought about all of the work that has been put in to get to this point, you know, to make her my wife. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So I'm curious to hear from any of our listeners who have cried. Or any wives out there of husbands who cried at their wedding day. So 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. All right, the Detroit Tigers. Yes, they are almost a 500 baseball team. Can you believe that? I never would have thought the Tigers, you know, sitting at, you know, at this point in the season, a little over 60 games now, you know, this team sitting at, you know, almost a 500 ball club. It's really remarkable what the Tigers have been doing. They've surprised me. You know, it's another Monday here in mid-June where we're looking at, you know, the Tigers, you know, really kind of just taking us on an emotional roller coaster. All of the Detroit sports fans out there who love the old English D. It's just kind of been an emotional roller coaster, you know, this season and even prior to this year, because this is a year that many people thought that the Tigers are going to be. And again, it's still early. I don't want to sit here and say, oh, the Tigers are going to be in a chase all year for a possible AL Central Division title. I don't know. I'm just saying right now I am shocked at how well this team is playing. They hover just a game shy of the 500 mark, 2.5 games out of first place in the AL Central. And after a day off today, the Tigers will enter an interleague play with the team as, you know, really just bad. Just a bad team in Cincinnati Reds. So, you know, a strong showing in against the Reds will put Detroit in a pretty good spot. Now, again, I'm not going off the edge here and saying that these Detroit Tigers are legitimately going to compete for a first place position in the American League Central, because honestly, you know, we've seen throughout this season so far with the Cleveland Indians, the Tigers will get close and then go on a losing streak. And then they get close and then go on a losing streak. So right now, you know, you're looking at 2.5 games out of that first place position. Are you buying what the Detroit Tigers are selling right now?
Me personally, we'll see how they do when they face some tougher competition. You know, the Cincinnati Reds, they have a chance to close the gap a little bit in the AL Central. But I think this team will go as far as their pitching staff takes them. I don't think that's a hot take. I think that's what everybody really agrees on with the Tigers this year.
Mm-hmm.
The Miguel Cabrera loss is sad, but with the sweep of the White Sox, they've shown that they can recover from that and move forward. Their offense is explosive enough to get them past most opponents. It's really just how far their pitching staff will take them and how consistent they can be. So I guess I need to see more. It's still too early for me.
It's still early. And you know what? Despite what happened in the fifth inning on Saturday, the Tigers seem pretty pleased with the return of Jay-Z, Jordan Zimmerman. Pitching coach Chris Bosio said he thought Zimmerman was outstanding in his first outing back. And everyone seems to think a lot of what happened to him in the fifth on Saturday could have been avoided by catcher Grayson Grainer, or Zimmerman adjusting to the change in approach the White Sox batter started taking after, I should say at the outset of that inning. But, you know, the return of Jordan Zimmerman, I mean, what we saw over the weekend with him was pretty encouraging. And also, I want to give mad props. And I did this a bit yesterday. Well, excuse me, not yesterday. Last week. We weren't on the air yesterday, Ian. Last week, when it comes to Ron Gardenhier, I'm really curious. I can't help but think, watching this Tigers team this year, if Ron Gardenhier was the manager of this team, you know, 2-3 years ago, how close the Tigers could have gotten to a possible World Series appearance. I really think that. I think, you know, when you look at Ron Gardenhier, he's an old school manager in a few ways. He reminds me of Jim Leland. The players love playing for him. You know, he's a player's coach. He's fiery. He's emotional. He knows the game. I like Ron Gardenhier a lot. And again, the criticism I have with Brad Ausmus, it just seems like he was just going through the motions, just collecting the check. He didn't have much experience coming in as a Detroit Tigers manager. He didn't have much managerial experience. He was young, up and coming, but it was just too much for him. I think it was a bit overwhelming for him. Would have liked to seen a manager with more experience than what Brad Ausmus had at the helm of that team during those years. Ron Gardenhier deserves a tip of the cap right now, even though it's early. We're already starting to see improvements with this team, right? In a year that we thought was going to be a rebuilding year, right, Ian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to have Gardenhier here. As you said, he's a player's coach, so it's good for a lot of the younger players to be able to create, you know, that special bond with their manager. Not to say Brad Ausmus wasn't a personable guy, but I don't think he necessarily took the same liberties that Gardenhier has been taking to make sure that these younger players develop in the way that they should. So yeah. I think the Tigers are moving in the right direction, definitely going forward. And I hope Gardenhier sticks around for a while.
Yeah, let's hope so, right? And, you know, Blaine Hardy, outside of the solo home run yesterday, only one White Sox runner made it to third base against the lefty. He was fantastic. And I think a lot of that has to do with Ron Gardenhier. You know, this veteran Tigers manager done a great job of putting Hardy in a position to succeed over his run of starts, keeping his pitch counts low, and rarely letting him pitch deep into the order for a third time. So we're seeing the arm of the lefty, Blaine Hardy, just fresh. And Ron has done a great job. Again, that's called being a manager. That's a great move by Ron Gardenhier, just making sure that his guys are fresh on the mound. And Nicholas Castellanos, I mentioned him in our headliners, his third home run in 2 days provided the scoring margin. And, you know, the bullpen continues its run of unexpected competence. And that has been a woe for the Tigers far too long. But again, it's still early. I always say that. That's why it frustrates me talking about baseball sometimes, Ian, because, you know, I can say it's still early at least for the next 2 months, right? So we all know it's early and anything could happen. I'm just being reactionary right now and evaluating what I've been seeing from the Tigers, and I like what I'm seeing. So I'm curious, you know, I want to hear from our listeners on this. And with only like 4 minutes left here, if you want to get in a quick call, 517-355-WKER, it'd have to be really, really quick. But again, comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKERnews. I'm curious, should the Tigers buy or sell, you know, when it comes to that trade deadline? Because right now, I don't know. I think you can make a case that they should buy. I think you can make a case. And I can elaborate more on that on tomorrow's show. I promise I will. All right. Let's hit our, you know what? 5 minutes left in. Let's just get right to it. Let's go right into our weekend winners right now.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, in. I am going with my weekend winner. I'm going with Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, even though I thought that he did the San Antonio Spurs just dirty, I didn't like the way he left the Spurs and the whole drama with his health this past season. I thought at least he should have been on that bench supporting his teammates when the playoffs hit. Kawhi Leonard is controlling his own destiny, which I'm all about, you know, in the NBA. But I'm also conscious of how those choices affect the power shift of the league. But Kawhi Leonard is controlling his own destiny. I think he's won because there are multiple teams out there that are interested in paying this man to come on their roster, and that includes the Los Angeles Lakers. Also, trade offers coming from the Boston Celtics as well for Kawhi Leonard. Just imagine, though, if he ends up with the L.A. Lakers and the Lakers get Paul George, I think that would be enough to lure LeBron James to L.A. If I'm him, though, I would still want to stick in the East because it's much easier to make it to the NBA Finals in the NBA's Eastern Conference than it is the West. But I could see how if they do get Kawhi Leonard out in L.A. along with Paul George, I could see LeBron making that move.
That would be very interesting to see.
Definitely. So I'm going with Kawhi Leonard as my weekend winner. You got one?
Yes, sir. Mexico. Mexico, the national team in the World Cup this weekend, picked up the huge 1-0 win over Germany.
Yeah.
Monumental win for them moving forward in the group stage. And it's been called the best victory in Mexican World Cup history, although some of the players on that team disagreed because they said, if we can't make anything out of it, then the win doesn't really mean much. But right. Great to see a lot of emotion on the field. I don't know if you saw the highlights, but Chicharito Hernandez, the star player for that team, was in tears as soon as the final whistle sounded. Sent goosebumps down my spine. So very cool to see for that Mexican squad to pick up the big win over the big bad bullies in Germany.
That was a great story over the weekend. You know, the drama of the World Cup, I tell you, on the field and off it this year. I don't know if you guys have seen this story, and I'll comb through this on tomorrow's show as well, but South Korea and Sweden have kind of like a spy gate going on here. It reminds me of like a 007 James Bond movie. I'll bring you that story on tomorrow's Current Sports. We also hope to have Jimmy Manuel on the show tomorrow, the father of Trevor Manuel, as Jimmy has his hand in bringing the ABA team to Lansing. That and more. We'll see you Tuesday, folks. Be easy, people.